Okay, Chris, we're going to get started, just so you know. Good evening. Tonight is the February 18th, 2014 meeting of San Luis Coastal Unified School District. We have a quorum present. We are opening the meeting up to the public prior to retiring to closed session. Is there anyone here who wishes to address the board at this time? Seeing none, we will close the this portion of the meeting and retire to closed session, returning at 6 o'clock for our regular agenda. Thank you.
Good evening. Welcome to the board meeting for February 18th. Want to report out from closed session that we had a discussion of CASI waivers for students with disabilities. We also had a conference with the labor negotiators concerning negotiations with CSEA, MEC, SEIU, and SLCTA. We also reviewed possible action on employment dismissal or discipline of a district employee and discussed anticipated litigation. We need a consensus now on an order of business. Okay. Seeing no, I think we're good with that. And I'm looking at 4.20. Is this where we do the CASI waivers? I thought I saw those later. That's later in the agenda, right? Okay, so let's go to the approval of the minutes for the February 4th board meeting.
I'll move approval of the minutes of February 4th.
Okay. We have a motion by Mrs. Roger for approval of the minutes and a second by Mr. Millar. And seeing any additions or corrections? Okay. We're all in favor of approving the minutes? Okay. We're good. Okay. I'm sorry. We have a 6-0 and an abstention by Mr. Unger, due to absence, is that correct? Yes, okay. All right, we are now on, excuse me, I'm just trying to catch up here. I don't see any student representatives, so we'll move past that. And it looks like item 5.02 is the presentation by the Los Osos Middle School STEAM program.
Well, good evening, everybody, and thank you for having us tonight. We have a two-pronged presentation for you tonight, which we're excited to have. I will first introduce Mr. Ken Hotaling, who is one of our sixth-grade teachers and his special guest, daughter Jane, who needs to be recognized for her art award that I witnessed today at the Vets Hall in Piramoro Bay. She did a great job. But we are going to give you an update on how our sixth grade program is going, some highlights, I think a little video and some pictures for you to see. And then secondarily, we will bring up another team of very bright teachers, Mr. Wilcox, Greg Wilcox, Raquel Meinke, Alyssa Eubank, and Matthew Robinette, who have been working on developing what STEAM electives will look like in 7th and 8th grade for next year. We're very excited about that. I want to make sure each one of you are aware that there's a small brochure in front of you. And what I like to reference this as is a registration guide. We know that parents are going to want to know about our new program. And very quickly, if you look inside that guide, down the sixth grade side are all the different wonderful opportunities that our sixth graders are currently engaging in regarding electives in STEAM. In seventh grade, you'll see four squares. Those are the four courses that students will be able to choose from. Those are semester-long courses, and the team will elaborate on that. And underneath each one of those courses are topics that will be taught in each one of those courses. So you'll notice.
And As you probably know, we kind of organize our day into kind of three main kind of academic blocks. There's one block of time that's dedicated towards the integration between math and science. Another block usually later on the day that has English language arts as well as history. But then a little bit just before lunchtime, we've got a STEAM block. And as Dr. Pruitt was mentioning, you know, for that acronym with either science, technology, engineering, arts, and mathematics, we've gone through and organized a couple of different rotations so far this year, in which each one of the students will be moving, you know, from classroom to classroom, sort of replicating like what they're going to be experiencing when they head up into the seventh and eighth grade. These little electives aren't really so much that they get to choose, because they'll kind of go, you know, as kind of a different class, but they will get exposure to a variety of other different sort of academic kind of applications of things that we're working on. A prior rotation that we've done was an advertising unit, for example. So like, well, one group of students may be working with me, working in radio advertising. Another group will be working on maybe like some computer coding and a Scratch ad, or there's some video ads or some print type of ads. And then after the 4 days, that group will kind of rotate around. So eventually after 5 weeks, each of the teachers gets to experience each one of the different students. We just finished a rotation in where we kind of concentrated our efforts more on power and energy. And if you would please, that's kind of more the end of the slideshow. If you can go back one more, that's the very end. That's okay. And I was going to kind of show you maybe a couple of pictures about some of the things that have occurred in a variety of other different classrooms and maybe kind of explain it. So this most recent rotation, as I mentioned, was dedicated to energy. And in one of the classrooms, this is actually Mr. Jarvis's classroom, he dedicated his towards solar energy. And through the course of the 4 or 5 days in which they were working together, they would go from some basic understandings of solar energy and then cap it off with some type of a project where they're applying the knowledge into some sort of project. Here we see model homes in which they're trying to harness the solar energy for not only for heat retention but also for insulation purposes. The next slide was another rotation that had to do with electric energy and more specifically with being an electric engineer. And the students that were in my class, this was my classroom, we started from basic ideas of what a circuit is and the way the electrons will move and the dangers of short circuits and the advantages and disadvantages of a circuit, of a simple circuit as well as a parallel circuit. And later on, as the week kind of went by, we were able to apply that knowledge. And here the students are bedazzling a fedora. They were given several different Christmas lights as well as an electric motor, and through a course of circuitry and of course a power source, they were able to make a hat that not only lit up but also moved as well. The next classroom was dealing with kinetic and potential energy, and this is Mrs. Burris's classroom, and through her rotation she was concentrating on those two different energies, and it capstoned here with a roller coaster and where a marble was traveling through some flexible tubing and working on different drafts and different sort of applications. Applications of math, you know, had to do with, like, you know, certainly slope and acceleration, but capped off, and you see, you know, kids on top of chairs and working together and, you know, applying some of the knowledge in which they've learned. In Mrs. Rickard's classroom, they were working with microcontrollers that were made by a company called Arduino. And here they were learning not only the basic ideas of circuitry, but through the application of computer coding, were able to not only complete circuits, but, you know, get the computers to, you know, start to do things that which they're designed to do. For example, they were, you know, lighting LED lights. And as the week went on, they would take the particular computer code and begin to hack. And not hack into maybe like the negative term, which you might sometimes hear in the, you know, on the news, but heck, you know, where we take the existing codes and alter it so that they are getting to do what they want the electronics to do. And eventually they had 8 different LEDs blinking in different sort of patterns. And Mrs. Spindler's classroom, and you'll sort of meet her a little bit more in a video in just a little bit, was dedicated towards wind energy and most specifically taking some of the ideas about atmospheric pressures and how that kind of kinetic energy can be transferred into electric energy. And if you look closely at some of the pictures, you'll see some wind tunnels, and they're analyzing the different sort of wind currents, and as well as the idea of being able to insulate and produce with wind and create coolers as well as heaters with that wind energy. And then and another elective type of thing that also is happening down on the West Wing is Mr. Jarvis has put together a Lion's Roar. And this is a kid-generated news station show that's going to be showing on channel 19, and here we wanted to kind of maybe show you a little snippet of the show that the kids have produced, and along the way you'll hopefully see, you know, you hear the kids singing, you hear the kids
of the Lion's Roar. The TV show created by 6th grade students at Los Osos Middle School
in Los Osos, California.
In Los Osos.
New. We have an awesome show for you today. We will be discussing STEAM, The Nutcracker, ASB, Mary Poppins, and we will be concluding with a special performance by our 6th grade band.
Our first segment will be about our STEAM rotations.
So tell us about these rotations.
We'll let Faye, Allie, Mandy, and Brianna tell us about that.
Take it away, guys.
Hello, I'm Brianna, and this is my friend Mandy from Lion's Roar. We're here to talk about STEAM.
STEAM means science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. It's a very fun way of learning with teamwork. We get to make tons of cool games and projects such as our board games.
For our board games, we are making an example design, making them look wonderful with details, paint, and designs.
We're also making ads for our games, such as radio ads, TV ads, a billboard, scratch ads, and experimenting with other commercials.
Something new our school is trying out is the laptops we use. The laptops we use for schoolwork, homework, and writing documents for projects and essays. The laptops are a new addition to education here at LOMS and are helpful in many ways.
Today we will look around the classroom and interview our teachers, Mrs. Spindler.
So, Ms. Spindler, how are you liking the new STEAM program?
It's a great opportunity to get all the students out here in 6th grade at LOMS. It's a lot of fun.
What do you think is the most exciting part of STEAM?
I think the integration of using computer technology, arts and mathematics, and science to get students to go ahead and learn new skills.
How do you feel having your students relying on technology most of the time?
It's awesome. We're able to go ahead and do a lot of fun different things. I have students begging to go ahead and write book recommendations, doing book reports, different ways to do our history projects, and doing our board games. It's a ton of fun.
How does this feel different from other schools? Do you think STEAM is a good idea to use at LOMS?
I think it's a terrific idea. Students are really engaged and having a lot of fun and wanting to learn.
Thank you, Ms. Spindler, for letting us interview you today.
My pleasure.
Go Lions!
Yeah, and that's about the end of the video for there. The full length show will be airing on channel 19. So, you know, stay tuned for that. But you know, just a brief little kind of little, you know, a day in the life, you know, at the 6th grade STEAM rotation here at Los Osos Middle School. So I thank you for your presence. And with that, I think my next job is to introduce the 7th and 8th elective teams. And so I think it looks like here comes Mr. Wilcox and everybody. So I thank you for your time. Have a good evening.
Welcome, board members and guests. We are here to introduce the proposed course for the STEAM electives.
Just hit Control F5.
There we go. My name is Raquel Meinke. I'm the art teacher here at Los Osos Middle School. And so, like I said, these are the proposed course for the STEAM core electives. These courses have been designed to allow students to explore through a variety of modules and increasing levels of mastery, and then apply that knowledge to real-world problems. The STEAM core electives would support the Common Core, and students would be creating e-portfolios, building on what the 6th graders are doing right now. It's a way for them to document, reflect, and share their work. And for next year, because it would be a transitional year, the 7th and 8th graders would be experiencing the same modules and same coursework. And then the following year, the 7th grade would build on what the 6th grade is doing, and the 8th grade would be more advanced.
All right. Hello, I'm Matt Robinette, and I'm a mathematics teacher here at Loams. And so throughout the year, students will progress through three different levels of mastery. They will build upon their prior knowledge to solve challenges of increasing difficulty. And so level one is required of all students. In level one, students will learn safety. They will learn how to model quality and precision. They will work on team building and presentation skills. And in level one, students lay the foundation of their knowledge.
And so we want to address what's relevant for the middle school learner, get them excited, and at the same time, then we're also exploring those career areas too of, again, science and technology. Another area, of course, that everybody's familiar with, I mean, who doesn't know about robots, you know? And you can kind of see in that lower picture there, that's Lego Mindstorm. So we look again, what's relevant to the learner? These kids have played with Legos since they were day one almost. And so we've advanced it up the ante, so to speak, level of difficulty. And so students are going to use those Lego Mindstorms to actually program their robots, and they're going to conduct all sorts of sensory experimentation with those. Don't want to get too into it, but I'm excited about this thing, so I'm going to have to keep myself short here, okay? Excuse me there, okay? I mean, just bubbling over with what we can do here.
All right, and I'm going to talk about some of the modules, level two modules that come up in the engineering sector. The first one is engineering structures. This is just an example. Students can design and build a bridge and then test their creation to see how much weight it can hold. Another example that we're really excited about is 3D printing. A former student at Los Osos Middle School and one of my best friends, Savannah Peterson, is a marketing manager for Shapeways, which is a leader, global leader in 3D printing. And so we have partnered up with Shapeways, and our students are going to be able to design three-dimensional models using software, computer software, send them to Shapeways, and Shapeways will print them graciously free of charge and send them back to our school for our kids to have. So this is something we're really excited about.
Okay, for the art and design modules, we would offer graphic design, and students would be able to design and print shirts or clothing, stickers, using Lumi inks, which are light-sensitive inks, and there's actually an iPhone app that the Lumi Corporation has put out. And so it's a photographic process, and also silkscreen.
These are technical difficulties. It's not a video even, it's just the next one.
It looks like it's loading on the bottom, so I'm afraid
yes,
to.
It's almost there. I love it. Thank you, Google. Thank you.
There we go.
Okay. And another module would be textiles, where students could make different fabric projects, e-textiles, where they're actually bringing together fabric, electronics, and computers.
And hi, I'm Melissa Eubank. I teach math and theater here at Loams, and I wanted to introduce you to some of the mathematics modules. So one example of this would be packaging, getting students to really relate their experience as a consumer to the producers in the packaging industry. So getting them to really investigate, how can I maximize volume by minimizing costs? How can I make safe transport of different items? Another mathematics module might include scale modeling, getting students to really take those two-dimensional images, transfer it to a three-dimensional model, and scale up or down that model accordingly to whatever the project is requiring. But just getting them to really go back and forth between different dimensions. And that brings me to level three. So like Greg said, all the level two modules would be about 3 to 6 weeks, and they come up to this final challenge of level three. This is where teams of students are created. Each student has a specialty that they bring to the table, and they come together to solve real-world problems using the knowledge they gained in that level one and level two. So here's an example of a level three problem, giving students the opportunity to investigate a problem. So this one is wearable technology. Can they apply the knowledge they gained to solve this real-world problem? Can they come together, create a design, come up with a solution with a given budget? And so this level three gives students choice to really showcase what they learned in a project of their design. And it will end in a presentation where they will present their idea, their design, the process they went through to a panel of people, and really trying to communicate how they were used their given budget to create this solution. Just give them that really real-world experience and challenge. And that is the three levels of our proposed STEAM elective program. And we wanted to thank you for your time, and thanks.
Yes, thank you very much. That was quite informative, and I want to thank Mr. Wilk.
And we'll bring them out here and expose them to the classrooms, the programs. They end up right here getting their cookie and milk at a set of tables, and then we answer the students' questions. And this year we plan to have current sixth grade students be there to answer questions for the incoming fifth graders, which will be really fun. So they'll be able to ask their counterparts, the first class, what their experience was like. So. Yes.
Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. Dr. Pruitt, I know that at least Mr. Unger and I'm assuming the other board members, received some questions from a middle school teacher, and that Mr. Unger forwarded those questions to you.
Correct.
I believe that there was some attempt to kind of address parts of the questions in the presentation, but I think that this particular teacher is very highly thought of by a number of people on the board, and the questions posed are thoughtful and really deserve to be asked and answered.
Yes, they were.
So although you answered Mr. Unger, that the rest of the board doesn't benefit from that correspondence. I wonder if I might pose these questions to you and ask you if you can kind of extemporaneously respond?
I'd be happy to.
Okay,
sure.
Thank you. The first one, is the quarterly final project for all four electives the same?
No. There's two philosophies, and I just was commiserating with my team behind me, that when we visited Dos Pueblos High School, the idea of a capstone project was very popular. We went down to the engineering academy, and the concept was that kids would learn skills, but they would learn those skills with fidelity through one shared project, that they all built a widget, the same widget. And through that project, they would understand the skill sets as they move through. We determined, after visiting both that and my attendance at the STEAM conference in Sacramento, that was not a creative approach to solving problems. So when I say no, we do not have capstone projects. We have shared problems and questions, but the solutions that the kids create are all individual to the students. So no, we don't have any kits or anything that all the kids are going to complete the same way. They're going to solve those problems in their own individual way.
Thank you.
Sure.
The next question was, exactly how does choosing one of these courses differ from choosing another?
Right. So I think that the brochure is the most clearly explain, clearly way to explain that. The way that I have framed this for myself is, as like any other course, every course has a course description. And in that course description, it explains what concepts or subjects will be taught within that course. And so that's what we've lined out for you in that brochure. If you open it again, and I don't have mine in front of me, but I know it, the seventh grade, those four courses, students will choose in their seventh grade year two of those courses. And those items that are listed below each one of those course titles are the subjects that they will cover in those areas. So obviously a student who gravitates towards art will take the A portion of STEAM Core. And you notice that it's loaded with art concepts.
Yeah.
Those students who are more into food and textiles might move towards the presentation course. Those that were in drama, in Alyssa's drama, this drama class, would really enjoy the engineering class. So each one of those courses has a list of topics that will be covered, and the kids will, and the parents will understand what's incorporated in each one of those classes, and then students will then select their electives based on that.
Okay, I get it. The question, does the rolling out of these courses necessitate the loss of our present electives?
Well, my response earlier, and I'd stay true to it, is that it requires a kind of a booster to the elective program that we have. I think just because of the time that we're in and what kids are exposed to and the career and college readiness requirements that we have for kids, that we needed to add things to our elective program. And I think that's the spirit of the STEAM program. So I think you'll notice that home economics skills, textiles, we saw that in the presentation, food sciences, foods, art and design is all still within our elective program.
So things are morphing and expanding.
Absolutely. It's morphing and expanding. But as we know, what we want the kids is to be able to learn a skill set, but then be able to apply that skill set in a creative and innovative way, in their own way. So we want to broaden and expose them to many skills, which, as Ken mentioned, is starting in the sixth grade with basic things like power and design. And then we'll increase those levels, as we heard from the elective team, in the difficulty at which they will have to expose the students to. So by the time they hit stage three in eighth grade and they're put together with a team of four, they will know how to sing in, as many of you recall, that we would attack Spanish in some way. Yes. And so starting in September, we started every Thursday after school for an hour, taught by my bilingual paraprofessional, Deborah Harris. She teaches what we're calling a Spanish club. But basically, there's 25 to 35 kids every Thursday, many of them from Pacheco who came to our school. And they're learning the Spanish language. They're writing the Spanish language. They are studying the Spanish culture. They have T-shirts. They're doing fundraising. So we have Spanish language on our site. We just did it in a creative way right outside of the classroom. So, and it's very well attended. And Deborah was just, we were just talking before I came to the meeting about the club. It's great. So we framed it as a club.
Do you anticipate that will be an ongoing thing?
Absolutely.
So long as Mrs. Harris remains on the site.
Absolutely. And I think she will, and I hope she will. But absolutely, the funding's there. I funded that with support from the district and my site. So it's ongoing, and it's exciting, and they're doing a lot in that environment. And we haven't had the problem of there's not enough room, so it just seems to be fitting the need. And it fit the number of requests, which was nice. So we're able to service those kids that want that Spanish experience.
Is it supporting the kids what they've already attained at Pacheco and moving them forward, or?
I can't answer that because it's not a course. So it's not a seventh period class. It's not a credentialed teacher teaching the class. They're not receiving Spanish 1 credit for the course when they go on to Morro Bay. But having said that, our parents are vocal, and our parents are very open, and I've received very positive feedback from those parents because I think they're realistic. You know, with us offering zero period band, zero period choir, Spanish, the STEAM wheel. I think a lot of the parents are saying, boy, our kids are getting quite a bit.
There's a tremendous amount going on
so,
here.
So, you know, you can have
that.
A student doing the STEAM elective, you can have them in band, and they could be having Spanish. So I think the parents are quite happy with the sixth grade experience so far.
Okay, thank you for taking the time to respond
Absolutely.
To those questions.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it.
Sure.
Mr. Buckman and then Mr. Unger.
Thank you. Actually, I have a few questions, so let me know if I can ask them all at once, Jim, or they're kind of connected. In this presentation tonight, I just heard of a new partner business supporter, and I'm wondering at this point if you, I know there's a lot of them, but if you could just give us a sort of rundown of, because it's getting to be a tremendous amount of people.
It is, and what we're finding is that we have people who I was just saying to Carrie Trujillo, my secretary, that it's now become kind of a weekly situation where, and I'm happy about it, that even our inside folks, our elementary principals, are calling and scheduling visits to come and see what's happening at our school. I'm really happy about the saturation and the interest amongst all of our principals within the district. Right. We just had a company come out from Colorado called Spark Fun, who sells the Arduino kits that you saw. They stationed themselves in Miss Burris's class, who's hiding out in the back. Hello, Miss Burris. They stationed themselves in Miss Burris's class with the goal of just extending the learning of our kids with Arduino and coding. And I think we're pleasantly surprised that our kids were, we know this Arduino stuff. And I'll tell you, if you've never experienced it, the Arduino is just a mini microcomputer that's sold as a starter kit. From there, there's wheels, there's propellers, there's lights that you can add on to that kit. To make that go, to make that little machine go, there's code that's written. And that's what we keep referencing. I think we did a Scratch presentation with young Mr. Jansen for you as a board. But that's initial code. So what they're then writing is the genuine code for Arduino. Mr. Hotelling talked about the kids hacking that code. The neat thing is Arduino, the company, gives you a preset code. In other words, if you have a little LED light that you've hooked onto your Arduino board and it's flashing every 3 seconds, what they challenge the kids to do is go into that code and make it flash every 8 seconds. So the kids dive in on their computers, the computers that you purchase for them, and they rewrite the code and they find within the code where is the timing. And then they go in and hack the code, rewrite it, and all of a sudden they see their light flashing every 8 seconds. So when we talk about consumers of technology, and we talk about just us buying the new iPhone and using it, we don't want that. We're out to create new technology. So we want kids to understand not only how the iPhone works, but then how can I tweak it to create new technology and solve their own problems. So Spark Fund came out to do that with us. We have a relationship with PG&E. Right. We have continuing that relationship with them. We've talked about everything from tables to lighting to, so we had the lighting agreement with them last year. We continue our collaboration with Cal Poly. Amy, am I missing anybody? Anybody else that we're collaborating with? What's that? Yeah, with Cuesta College, we had $120,000 to start some adult school classes. So in our current adult school catalog, any courses that are offered at the Slow Makerspace are offered out here at the Coast for the Coast families in our Makerspace. And we did that purposely to expose people to this concept. So we're working with Dr. Slaughter, Mr. Ken Rothmeyer, to offer those courses. That's another collaboration that we have ongoing with them. He's been out and trained us. And then our own folks, Eric Jarvis, is offering Google training for our Google migration next year. As many of you know, our staff and teachers are migrating to Google and the Google Education Suite. So Eric Jarvis is teaching classes every first and third Thursday of the month. And we have many of our seventh grade teachers attending because they know what's coming next year. And that's kids who are ready to use Google. So they're getting ahead of that in preparation for that.
Thanks,
as well.
Kyle. Just one more.
And I'm sorry, that was a long, long, long answer.
Yeah, I was.
Okay.
It was great.
Okay.
Is it Mrs. Raquel? Did I get that?
Mikey.
Oh, no, Raquel Mikey? Yes. Raquel, yeah. You want to come up?
This is just kind of quick because for me, is art successfully integrating in with these other hard sciences? I mean, we kind of got.
Oh, you know what? Can I? Oh, man, I'm so excited. go ahead. Good, because I'm art teacher too. I got to tell you a really exciting collaborative project that happened this year. Raquel we had a science teacher who had always struggled with kids that would look at a microscope and then try to draw in perspective what they saw in size relations. So I'll let Raquel take it from there.
So I collaborated with the seventh grade science teachers, and we put together where we did some blind contour drawing, and we talked about really using their eyes and getting the eye-hand coordination down, and did some practice drawings. And then they transferred that and drew their slides when they did their lab, and they said the drawings were amazing. So there's different opportunities. I've also worked with Gail Goodman just in the past few weeks doing, they're doing poetry books.
Oh,
and some found poetry, and we did some quick art. And I was showing the kids, too, that even if you don't think of yourself as an artist, there are ways to make your work creative and present it as nicely as you can.
And it also sounds like those are some career links that you're also building.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Mr. Unger.
So it sounds like this is sort of a reformation of the elective process. Instead of the traditional electives, you're proposing that these become the electives now, right? So instead of what we used to do, wood shop, metal shop, cooking, drafting, stuff like that, that this is going to be it, right?
Yeah, in a way. I think, you know, I don't want to devalue what we're currently doing, because the skills that the students are learning in our elective programs are very valuable. What we're doing is we're adding the purpose at the end of it. So what I mean by that, Mr. Unger, is that we're trying to create an environment where when the kids learn how to stitch and sew, that they then think, how does this apply to solving some sort of a design problem? Or taking it to the next level of requirement. So taking those skill sets of how to use a bandsaw, how to use a planer, going through all of that, learning the wood elements, learning the cooking elements, the food science elements, learning some basic stitchery, basic sewing skills, learning about fabrics and textiles, but then taking all of that knowledge and applying it to solving career and technical problems. So I see it as kind of a booster to the elective program, but yes, not the traditional cook for the sake of cooking or sewing to just sew, but to solve problems.
And then we're going to continue band and choir.
Absolutely. And I'll be frank with this group. That's one of the challenges we're having as exists now. If you are in band or choir, you cannot partake in our current electives. So those are wonderful programs. But as our students will show up to school tomorrow, if you have choir, you're not in our wheel. So that's been an ongoing issue forever. You don't get to take any of the electives if you take band or choir. So what we're trying to work out is, how do we get what we have in the sixth grade? Right now we have in the sixth grade, kids can play in the band, and then they go to the steam wheel in the middle of the day. So there's a solution to everything. We just have to find it. And the minds in the room and sharing the leadership on this has been so incredibly enlightening to me, because each and every time we talk, some new solution comes up. So we know we can solve it. We just got to have to solve it. So we're working on that.
And then finally, how will the capstone project, or the level 3 eighth grade project, how is that going to be graded?
Yeah, it's a great question. We've had many discussions, and I'm going to speak for the group, and then I don't know. But we've had some initial each one of those areas. So maybe you have a student who can talk and talk and talk, but technically not real strong, the coding part. On the flip side, you have a student, which we all know, who technically is a genius, can get in there and design and build and create and code, but if asked to stand in front of a group, they won't do it because they're so nervous. So they need to grow their skills in that area as well. So we see them receiving a grade in the four different areas, and then having that document be what they take when they go to enroll for electives at Morro Bay High School, because we're already thinking about the link to Morro Bay. So what they'll have is information about themselves in the area of STEAM. They'll know where they are strong, and they'll know where they need to grow. And so we see them graded on a rubric. We see them graded in each one of those individual disciplines, and then being able to make a decision with their family, do I enroll in the courses I'm real strong in at Morro Bay? Maybe that's a choice. Or do I go down a pathway where I need to grow? I'm going to selectively pick this pathway that's going to grow my skills in that area. So just being real deliberate in the way that we separate the skill sets in each one of those classes.
And so you've been having discussions with Morro Bay High School about next steps for the matriculation from eighth grade into
ninth grade? It's been a consistent conversation. I'm sorry, Chris.
No, that's okay.
Go ahead and finish your
thought. And then the last thing I'm just curious about is, do you see this ultimately becoming part of a linked learning plan that we might start thinking about at some point?
It's being thought of.
Okay.
And that was a direction from Dr. Prater from the very start. I've heard that time and time again, that the disaster that could happen and cannot happen, and it's been told to me very clearly, is that we cannot drop the ball for these kiddos as they go into high school. So Ms. McGrath continues, we just got out of a principal's meeting, secondary principal's meeting, where STEAM was on the agenda. And the discussion is, how does this articulate to the high school? Because the worst thing that can happen is to take these kids through eighth grade with the technology that they have, with the skill set that they have, and then have them drop off the cliff because there's nothing for them moving on into high school. So we've started those conversations, and we're moving forward. To be honest with you, I had a parent come to me last week and try to disenroll their seventh grader, who's almost 13, and try to enroll him as a sixth grader. So that's the level of excitement that we have in this program. I kind of turned it down because the age was a little awkward. I have another appointment tomorrow with a teach parent who wants to come and talk to us about the program. So we're excited.
Dr. Eisenarth Rogers.
Hi. So you mentioned that you used West Pueblos as a model. You visited West Pueblos.
We did.
And you've also been to the Sacramento STEAM Conference.
Yes.
Did you hear anyone talk about how they are solving the issue of integrating choir and band into a STEAM program? Are there any models out there we can...
No, and that's my fault. I should have asked. I think it's one of the things that Carl Bloom, my assistant principal, is fabulous at, which is he'll come to me with, I found this, I found that, I found this. What about this schedule? He's just superb at that. So I'm kind of leaning on Carl that one of these days he's going to come in and say, what about this school? What about that school? Because I think really what it's going to come down to is a creative solution with our schedule. I will give our staff credit. They see what's going on in the sixth grade, and the seventh and eighth grade teachers looked at us and said, that block thing, we're really... but next year, so we're looking at something that might be a hybrid of that, where we can offer some learning blocks in the afternoon. But as you know, that's a contractual issue that they will have to vote on as a schedule with the staff. And so they're excited. They want to try the concept of a block schedule and longer learning blocks. And I think that might afford us the opportunity to create, solve some of those solutions. But we're continuing to talk about that.
It's a good problem to have when you have so many good programs going on.
Well, yeah, I think we just go to school till 4 o'clock, and then that solves the issue, be honest.
I like that.
Any more questions? Thank you, Dr. Pruitt.
Well, I appreciate
Thank
it.
Very
Thank
much.
You very much for the
okay.
time.
Okay. Yes.
And thanks
yes.
to my team.
And by the way, young Mr. Robinette, I understand congratulations are in order for you.
Okay, having dealt with that, let's move on to official correspondence. We have had some official correspondence addressed to the President of the Board or the Board of Education. We've received the following correspondence. These are all concerning the proposed Johnson Avenue project. We have letters from Laurel and Saeed Devar, Jan DeRocher, Doctors Cynthia and Ben Griffin, and Jed Hazelting.
Email me because I can help you on that because I have so much time. In different avenues and careers that are home economics related. No, we do not teach you to be home economists. That's antiquated, and I have to say that over and over and over again. So we have to travel to different places. The other schools in our Central Coast area have either left FHA or no longer have home economics in their school, and we used to have a Region 7 here that allowed all the schools that did offer home economics to get together and do competitions and move on to state competitions. So San Luis Obispo High School has the biggest FHA hero membership, student membership that I've known about since I've been at the high school for 10, 11 years. And it's like going gangbusters. But we have to travel up to the Bay Area for our fall region meeting, for our competition that we just did 2 weeks ago, and then we're going to Riverside in April to compete statewide. I took 11 girls, 10 competed, all 10 were in the top five, which the top five go on. So I am taking those plus one other one. So that's 12 kids, two teachers, and it costs us money. So I am like frantically fundraising. Our fundraiser that we're putting on that the superintendent's office has two teams. I don't know if you know that. You do, I think. Which I'm thrilled about. And I think I just today got two firefighting teams. They cook a lot. I hear they're good. We're putting on an Iron Chef competition. We have enough kitchens at San Luis Obispo High School to have six teams that have equal facilities.
Just continue.
I ignore a lot of stuff, so that's easy. And so we'll have six teams. It's $100 a team to enter the competition. You can have 2 to 4 members of your team, and they're going to be cooking an appetizer, main dish, and a dessert. And I'm in contact with chefs downtown to be the judges so that we have real chefs. I'm also going to email Giuseppe again about, are they going to be our first prize? I'm hoping, because that's a big draw. And then we are hiring out our, or I'm, no, the students are hiring themselves out to be the dishwashers and gophers for $50, which will help pay for their registration and stuff to go to our state meeting. So I asked Chris, hey, do you think the board would like to go up against the ladies from the superintendent's office?
No, the men in the superintendent's office are throwing down. The men in the superintendent's office intend on winning this competition, I'll have you know.
I hear they're pretty good. They told me they were really good.
We are arguing in the office whether this is going to be a random selection or if it's going to be the boys against the girls. But
ooh,
it'll be fun.
I'm excited.
And we in the office challenge the board to come up with a team. Come on.
So I have a letter here and an application that I am going to give to the board president. I'm starting to having nightmares about it, so if you could let me know really soon, that would be great. I'm also working with the... This is so funny after steam just went. I'm working with a metal shop and wood shop. I've designed the trophy, and they're going to put it together for me. That's called collaboration, right? Okay, good. And so I brought a couple things that my students have just competed in, just to let you know. There's not a lot of stuff to bring, but I did bring something. One of the things that they compete in is fashion design, and they have to do a board. They have to do a cost breakdown of how much everything costs, how much the total costs, the type of fibers that they're using, the elements and principles of design. And so it's more than just fancy drawing, and it's also putting a presentation together. They have to present it in front of judges and show that they actually know what they did, which is where things fall apart sometimes. So, this is my Chinese foreign exchange student. She actually placed second. I think there were 10 before I could design. And that's one of the things that sewing teaches, is how things actually go together, so that the kids who want to be designers understand that whole concept. So I have students that compete in apparel construction. They have 2 hours to complete an entire project, and then they take a written test on all the things you should know if you're sewing. So this is a practice project, and the material was actually donated by Performance Apparel, which is a manufacturing company that we have in San Luis. So, and they can make it as many times as they want, and I can tell you in competition because I was watching it, they choke. They're not used to having somebody stand over them and write down little comments as they're sewing. So it was a good learning experience for them, and I think they're ready for state. And one of the other things that we present at our competition is a chapter manual. It kind of highlights all the things that we've been doing. I don't know if you want to look at this. I think that'd be awesome. One of my other big fundraisers is a fashion show that I put on out like 7 years ago. I went, we should just put on a fashion show with all the stuff that you guys are doing. And I did it, not really knowing what I was doing. Well, it's grown. It's huge. We put it on at Renaissance Salon. He donates the building. It's a $500 usually rent to rent his building, and he donates that to us for nothing, just as community outreach. And we have downtown stores that let us have models that present their clothes, and it's pretty exciting. It's May 31st, if anybody would like to come. It's usually packed, and I sell tickets, so you can always email me, and I can get you some. So that is our biggest fundraiser, is the fashion show. We're hoping that Iron Chef is going to be equally as big because it's very expensive. It's $269 for me to send each student plus the two teachers. It's the same price. So whatever we don't raise, I'll probably just pay for it. What? Of course I take donations. Thank you so much for starting that, too. Kyle and I were talking, home economics, that term is antiquated, and we all understand that, and I'm constantly battling that, but the skills and the pathways that we have are definitely for today's society and how to understand, you know, a direction and learn skills so that you can have a job, go to college, go to a technical school, and actually have skills before you get there to be successful. So thank you very much.
Thank you. And Dr. Eisendorf Rogers has a question or comment.
Okay.
No, I just want to say that on behalf of the board, I'd like to accept the challenge from the district office that it's a throwdown. We're going to have a food fight with the ladies, that as long as Val agrees not to do dessert, and then it's an even playing field.
I have a question. I have some previous experience as a short order cook. Does that disqualify me?
It does disqualify you.
Oh, really?
Yes.
But it was a long time ago. It was, oh, golly, 40 years ago or more. It was actually at the University Center in Santa Barbara, so.
Oh, just a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Well, your wife is an excellent cook. Perhaps she could stand in for you.
Anything Mexican, yes. Absolutely.
The one thing is, and I had one of the teams ask me the other night what the secret ingredient is. There will be a secret ingredient. My club came up with it, and they're sworn to secrecy. And they came up with a better one than I had, so it'll be exciting.
Thank you very much. And feel free to return anytime to let us know what's going on. And
well, it was exciting to hear about what's happening at the middle school over here, so.
Thank you. Well, that was fun public comment. We like that. Thank you very much. We need more of that. That's right. Okay, so we are closing public comment. I see no one else here and no requests. We are now going to the business and budget updates. So
I will speak on behalf of Mr. Pinkerton, who is attending the San Luis Obispo City Council meeting this evening to hopefully see through a vote on our sewer sewer rate adjustment, which could earn us as much as $300,000 a year in previous perhaps overbilling, if you will. So he's there to make sure that goes. He just sent me a text saying you to do, or to do more of, or less of, perhaps. I want you to know in the next 3 weeks, we will also be hosting luncheons at the district level with community groups. And so those are scheduled over the next 3 weeks. And I will make sure that Mrs. Holmes sends the invitations to you as well. And we'll just serve sandwiches and salads. During those meetings, we'll seek public community input for the LCAP process as well. I want to thank Mr. Unger and Mr. Robinette, as well as the District 24 PTA, for hosting the Common Core Community Forum at J2 this last week. Though it wasn't really well attended, the information was helpful, and I thought Chris and Rick did a fabulous job. The last thing, since we're on the topic of business update, and there's nothing really to report from the state level. However, what's really not sitting well with me is the increasing knowledge that the LCFF, local control funding formula, when it comes to community-funded school districts, I can tell you that that the LCFF really does represent a challenge for us in the years to come. And I say that to you because even though it looks and it appears as though we will continue to receive local property tax revenue, it's becoming increasingly apparent that we will be held sort of victim to unfunded mandates from the state level. So while I completely agree and acknowledge with Senator Steinberg's attempt for universal TK, school for all 4- and 5-year-olds, what a wonderful notion. If you look at our initiatives and if you look at what San Luis Coastal has been implementing, you can see that we're well on our way. However, if those sort of legislative efforts gain momentum and gain anchor points in terms of funding down the road, you can be sure that those revenues will go into the LCFF formula, for which we receive no additional money for. So I can see us down the road being held victim, if you will, to those sort of Sacramento mandates that we may, in fact, already may be doing because it's our local decision. However, the state will mandate it, that we do it, and we won't receive any money. So it becomes quite the challenge, almost a leveling down, if you will. And I just wanted to share that with you, that is what I see happening with the LCFF. So from a legislative point of view and from a place where an advocacy place, I believe community-funded school districts really need to emphasize that is a leveling down of our ability to support our kids, as opposed to the intention behind the LCFF, which is to provide more revenue to schools to do things for kids that they see the need for. So I'm all about local control, and I believe it's an important piece. However, I'm leery about state influences and decisions that will be made at that level without funding for us. That's all my update for today.
Thank you, Dr. Prater. I do have one question. I had a teacher write me with the concern that the California Common Core standards and the presentation that was made in town for the PTA district, they raised the issue of can we have something similar to that done maybe here at Los Osos Middle School or Del Mar on the coast. And so anyway, that I'm bringing that to your attention.
Yeah, I consider it a worthwhile event anytime you can reach out to your community and explain the impact of the Common Core state standards is a worthwhile thing. I like to look at it as part of our LCAP process. So I believe that we need to hold a community forum to discuss not just Common Core. As the District 24 PTA, their interest was to discuss Common Core. I happen to believe that it's a more complex conversation about what we're trying to do with our local control accountability plan in relation to our funding. And the interest behind that is Common Core is at the center of that, which is what are we trying to do? And so I would be more than happy to reach out and schedule something for the coast.
Thank you, Mr. Unger.
And this was a discussion at the last CSBA Board of Directors meeting, and a concern surfaced about the continuing funding and the necessity of, if it's going to be offered, will there be funding for it? We've had some experiences in the past. Class size reduction comes to mind, where we've had this mandate that's really been underfunded and continues. And so as great an idea as early childhood education is, and I can't imagine anybody arguing against it, there's got to be the funding behind it.
So,
yeah, for everybody, absolutely.
And so if I can just follow up on what Chris is saying, all in favor of it, personally. The price tag that Chris is talking about is a $1 billion a year price tag in the state of California. And, so much money, $26 billion were taken away during this last recession, that my comment would be, let's get public education back where it was, get it back on track, and then start looking to find another $1 billion.
Thank you. Any further comments or questions? Okay. Then let's move on to item 8.01. It's a discussion item, and it's the Memorandum of Understanding between Cayucas Coast and San Luis Coastal Unified for the transfer of Cayucas High School students to San Luis Coastal.
Thank you. As the board is aware, and I probably don't have to go into a long history, for some time, the students who graduate from the Cayucas Elementary School District, which is a one-school K-8 program, are slated to go to the Coast Unified School District for their high school program. And yet, we know historically, going back at least a decade and probably beyond that, the majority of those students find their way into our school district, mostly to Morro Bay High School, but not exclusively to Morro Bay High School. It's been about 2 years now. A group of petitioners from the Cayucas community challenged that and began a kind of a drive for a territory transfer, beginning with a petition drive that ended up in a county committee to look at that. The county committee ended up rejecting that request for a vote for the territory transfer. As the board is aware, that the petitioner appealed that to the State Board of Education. Our school district also appealed that decision to the State Board of Education, but it was rejected to be heard on appeal. So it is not being heard. It will not be heard. To his credit, Dr. Crocker worked with the three school districts involved to see if there's something we can do to at least in some way satisfy the fact that students are still ending up in San Luis Coastal, and yet money is being sent to the Coast Unified School District for the education of these students. And so, I was charged with being an emissary to this negotiation of seeing if we can work out some arrangement that may be temporary but may kind of at least in some way bring about some sort of meeting of the minds in this area, knowing that maybe down the road something else could happen. So what I have in front of you is an MOU that we developed. So I sat with members from Coast Unified, Cayucas Elementary School District, as well as the County Office of Education. Mr. Pinkerton joined me in one of the meetings, and what we have in front of you is a MOU for your consideration, and the same MOU is being considered by four boards of education right about the same timeline. It's not the best agreement. I think it's a negotiated agreement. When we go into negotiation, I think we're always looking to try to get the best deal we can get, and I'm always a little disappointed when we finish because it's not the best deal we can get.
but I think it's a good deal, and I think the board should support it. Let me just kind of point out the four key areas. Key area one is that this is still an inter-district transfer agreement, meaning that if a student who is attending the Coast Elementary, or I'm sorry, the Cayucas Elementary School District in the eighth grade, they are supposed to go to Coast Union High School. That is still the arrangement. They would have to apply to that high school for an inter-district transfer. Coast Union can say no. They can say no currently. They can say no, you cannot apply for a transfer. You cannot go to San Luis Coastal. And if they say no, it stops right there. That family can appeal to the County Board of Education, but otherwise it would stop at that point. But under this agreement, if Coast Union said yes, go ahead and go, then unlike our current practice, we would accept that, as I already mentioned, which is that this is still an inter-district transfer. And the fourth thing is that the boards, all three of these boards, would agree that they would not initiate any action to reorganize any of these districts while we're under this MOU. The original language in there said that no board would support an action, and so I was, on your behalf, I was not willing to let that language stand because I felt like any board, especially a board that's subject to election every couple of years, needs to be able to have the right to support whatever they want to support. And so we had an attorney who specializes in territory transfers kind of giving us some information, and I felt pretty confident that that word initiate would not prevent this board, the Cayucas board, the Coast board, from at any point supporting a community effort if there was still some effort to unify or change territory. So that word initiate just basically says that this board would agree not to start that, or the Cayucas board or any board, but that at whatever point a petitioner comes forward and seeks a board support, that we would be allowed to do that. This is a first reading, so I'm here to answer questions. If you want to send me back to the table, you can do that too, and we'll bring it back for a second reading unless you want to adopt this today. But this is going to all four of the boards of education over the course of this next month, so that if we accept this MOU, it will become effective and we can start accepting those students. So, open for questions.
Mr. Millar.
Thank you. So my first question is, what is my first question? Here it is. So basically, Coast Union is going to keep their inter-district options, discretion intact.
Yes.
Think say yes or no. We are going to change our current inter-district transfer policy so that we're no longer going to say no as a matter of course.
Correct. For those students coming, for those students who live in Cayucas.
Cayucas. That strikes me as a little bit out of balance, but I guess we want Coast Union to be encouraged to say no to transfers ultimately.
Well, unless we're interested in getting $6,300 for a student. Right now we're getting zero, and they're coming.
And I understand that, and that's an important distinction, but that leads me perhaps to my next question, which is, what is the per pupil dollars in Coast Union? What do they spend on a student?
Because of the pretty exorbitant increase in property taxes that the Cayucas community, they went up 7% this last year. I don't know. It was about $1.3 million a year going to Coast, and it's considerably
more than
that.
But don't they spend something like $12,000 a kid?
Oh, yes. Okay. And yet the money they're getting from Cayucas is far more than $12,000 a student because there's not many students going.
So we're gonna, and I do understand that this, as $6,314 is far short of the number that they're actually receiving to educate these children that won't be there. It is a $6,300 and more than what we're currently getting. So my next question is, in speaking with the attorney who had experience with land transfers, mm-hmm. What are we giving up in a practical sense with item number one under responsibilities and assurances?
We're probably, in a practical sense, we may be giving up a fast track to getting to a county committee and then getting to a state. Because if a board of my understanding is if a board of education initiates a unification or a territory transfer themselves, that the timeline for that process moves a little faster than if a citizen initiates it because of the need for a petition drive, the need for those petitions to be counted and looked at. And so it could fast track the whole process by a few months. Otherwise, I couldn't see any real negative in this except for maybe the speed with which the action could take place. It does, though, hamper a district from saying, we want to unify with Coast Union, and we're going to initiate that process, or something like that.
Would we be looking more at unifying for Cayucas Elementary?
If it ties anyone's hands, it'd be the Cayucas Board, because right. I could perceive of them at some point wanting to do something, but they seemed very comfortable with this. The representatives seemed very comfortable with this arrangement.
Well, they may be having a leadership change soon.
They are.
Okay, so your sense is that we're not going to bump up against these limitations on number of students?
No, we haven't so far.
If we were to bump up against the limitations,
education will be the party that will help us sort out difficulties.
Well, yeah, they're referred to as convener of all parties to resolve differences. You know, that doesn't exactly import
they'll get us together.
New power to them or take any of their old powers away, I guess. So your view that we probably won't bump up against these limits, is that based on the demographics of Cayucas Elementary, basically how many kids they have every year?
Yeah, and if you were to look at a traditional class of eighth graders, which is about 25 students, a portion of those, 20%, usually are ending up at a private school. A portion of those are our own students, so they don't reside in Cayucas because they accept interdistrict transfers from Northern Morro Bay students who stay in their school. So we actually have students who go to that school that belong to us. We wouldn't be getting money for those students. And then a certain portion of them go to Coast Union High School. I mean, they do have a handful of students every year that go to that school. So it's probably the 20s, probably a maximum.
Okay. I'm going to yield the floor, but I would like to see this come back for a second reading. And just my view is that we should probably the group should probably look at adopting some dispute resolution language.
Very good.
It's pretty nebulous for me.
We have Mrs. Sheffer and then Mr. Unger.
Rick, because I'm just going to sort of get to the bottom line in a minute, which is about the money, I want to preface this by saying that I look back on those days of Cayucas coming and speaking with us as with a great deal of respect for those families and the interest that they had. It really resonated, their description of the Estero Bay community and that they've been part of this community their entire lives, and then to suddenly what they felt was rather arbitrarily have to kind of rip their kids away from the connections they had here. I really understood that. But so going back to what we know in round numbers that Coast spends per student, I think it's important to be clear that they're still going to make close to $6,000 off of students they're not educating.
So, more than that. Much more than that.
So it's and that I hope that money is well spread around on the student population they have. But it's just hard for me to realize that so they will continue to receive such a large amount of money, that the money, a little of the money is following the students, but certainly not all. And we will still be picking up the difference for educating those students. And it's just important to me that that be really clear.
Yeah, by my estimation, less than 10% of the money would be following the students to us. I mean, if they're getting, say, $1.3 million a year from Cayucas to educate students and we get 16 kids, we'll get $100,000. They'll keep 1.2. So, but it's money they're not sending right now, and
right.
They certainly don't have to.
I understand that. It's kind of a tough pill to swallow, but I want the kids and their families to have what benefits them the most. So, thank you.
Mr. Unger.
A couple of questions. So once we accept a student, do we own them for all 4 years, or will there be an annual renewal process of the inter-district transfers?
Well, we will have them annually renewed. We have an annual renewal process for all inter-district transfers, so we'll keep that in place. We'll also have the right to say if attendance, grades, behavior go downhill, that we can ship them back like we do with any inter-district transfer. It gets a little trickier per ed code when you get to 11th and 12th grade. Once you get a student in the 11th grade, depending on which section of ed code you read, you pretty much own that student. So, but we would still be getting money for those students every year. So once they hit the 11th grade, they'd still apply for an inter-district transfer, and when they're a senior, they'd still apply for an inter-district transfer. We probably have a lot less grounds for refusing those ones at that point. But we would have all of these students annually apply.
Okay. And we would have the right, if we, God forbid, we needed to expel a student during that time, we would expel them back to, well, we would just expel them, and then it would be up to Coast to take them back. Is that
right?
Correct?
Okay. Right. And we would have to give back that proportion of the right. dollar.
Yep. That would be my guess too. And I, thinking about bringing things back for just maybe some dispute resolution, I don't know if it's possible, but there could be some extraordinary costs that I think we'd want to consider. Also thinking about what Mr. Millar is talking about, the signatory on this, it's the San Luis Obispo County Office of Education. I imagine that's the superintendent of schools. However, the inter-district transfers are controlled by the County Board of Education, which is separate from the superintendent of schools. So we might want to think about that, since they would be the ones who would be approving inter-district transfers, and the SUP doesn't have any say in that. I think I'm correct about that.
You are.
And then finally,
I want to make sure I'm clear so I can bring this back.
Well,
you would want to have board approval on this as a signatory, not just the superintendent's approval.
I think we would want to have approval from the County Board of Education.
Got
because they're the ones that are acting on the inter-district transfers, not the superintendent
Correct.
Of schools. And then the last thing is, and I'm just for clarification, this agreement would not preclude the people of the community of Cayucas from going out on their own and initiating a territory transfer. Is that
Absolutely.
Correct?
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Buckman and then Mr. Millar.
Thank you, sir. One of the things that we might want to examine is often these types of proposals include siblings, because families don't want to break up somebody that's within a year or two of their children. So I don't know if that's something that wants to be discussed or not. But once one is started at Morrobay High School, there's sometimes a guarantee that a second one goes.
We don't have that policy currently for inter-district transfers, so I don't think we would have to consider that.
Okay. And then the second thing is we are moving into a place in the state of California where we're entirely changing the funding formula.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how you would do it, but it might be something that we need to examine in this. Because the last time I checked, Coast will be coming out pretty much at the end of LCF, coming out at even where they are. And the last time I checked, San Luis Coastal is not going to be coming out. We'll be getting less money.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you can do it on some kind of sliding scale or if there's any opening for that discussion.
Well, the idea is that the 75 we would base, and this would be a 3-year agreement, and that we would base the amount we receive on 75% of the local control funding formula target grant. And so we would get, and that's expected to increase every year as they get closer to that target. So if things go well, this would be a little more money per student next year. And but we'll see how that goes. That depends on the state coffers too.
Mr. Millar.
The bottom of page one is the process, the approved inter-district transfer IDT process and policy of each district will be followed as participants in this MOU. Who approves this inter-district transfer policy? Because as far as I could tell, we're the only ones that are changing our policy. So is it the negotiating group that's going to approve everybody's inter-district transfer?
No. The process right now is it's the same process. A student would have to go to a Cayucas resident would have to go to Coast Union, request an inter-district transfer. They have to request to leave the district they're supposed to go to. That's current practice. They would have to do that under this. Right now, Coast says, yeah, go right ahead. My guess is they'll probably still do that with this agreement, but they certainly have the right to say no.
The student would have come to us.
And the student would come to us, and our current practice is to deny those transfers,
correct.
Have an appeal. Sometimes we consider them, especially students who have already been with us. We let them come in. Often we say no. And then they go to the county office, and the county office then has control over that. So all of that would remain the same. I think the big difference would be if this works the way I think it's going to work, Coast will say, yes, go ahead. We're going to send you $6,300. We'll say, yes, we'll take the $6,300 and make the families happy.
Okay. So we're the only ones doing anything differently.
Other than Coast is sending us money now.
Well, yes. I mean, I do get that. So what we've got is a situation that mitigates this inequity, this unfairness, but doesn't eliminate it.
Does not eliminate it.
Any further questions, comments? Mrs. Roger?
Well, I thank you. Mr. Robinette, I'm just wondering, the 75% of LCFF that this contemplates sending to us for each child is so much less than the basic aid funding that Cayucas...
Sending 75%. Why aren't we sending 25%? Because we don't have to do this. So I'm your emissary. I'll do whatever you want with all this. So just tell me what you want me to message you want me to send, and I'm happy to send it. But
excellent negotiator.
I think it's a decent MOU for us.
Okay. So based on your pretty long history of negotiations, you feel like you gave this your best shot?
Yeah. Yeah. But what I have, and I just want to make sure I'm clear, and I know it's not everybody in the board, but to clarify dispute resolution language a little better, to kind of look at the extraordinary cost issue and if there's some language we need to put into there, and then to seek a board approval from the County Office of Education, not just the superintendents, as a signatory to the MOU. Was there anything else you wanted me to...
Mr. Millar has a suggestion.
Yes.
Well, it's another question. I noticed in the transfer of funds paragraph, it discussed that the target grant per ADA for grade span 9-12 without grade span adjustment. What are we giving up dollar-wise in not including grade span adjustment, whatever the heck that is?
Well, we will still be able to retain the adjustment for – there's extra funding for CTE for the 9-12, and then there's also lottery funds that we get, and those are ADA. Those are ADA delivered.
Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. In saying that we'll not deny any requests for transfer, does that mean that we'll be taking special education students?
We will still be recognized. We can't discriminate in the basic of special ed ever. It will still be recognizing the SELPA agreement with special education students. So there'll still be that expectation that there are certain students that are actually part of block cost models that we have that we pay for. Or that they pay for also.
Okay. Mr. Unger, please turn on your microphone. So, thank you.
Sorry. There you go. But in the case of a special education student who was
with us who was transferred from Kite, who was receiving services because of the Kite being a Cayucas resident with us in one of our special day classes that's paying our block grant. When we accept them into our program, we'll accept them at $6,300 instead of the full block that we're receiving.
No, we'd still be getting the block costs. We're pretty clear on that. So we'd still be getting the SELPA block costs for a student from Cayucas attending an SDC program.
I think we would need to have that as part of the agreement, because the minute they get an interdistrict transfer, we become their district of residence. And so I would want to make sure that, again, sort of goes back to that extraordinary cost. We could have a medically fragile student come from Cayucas in seventh grade at the block, whatever our block is for that $30,000, let's say. The minute they become a ninth grader, they would become our student, and we would get $6,800 for it.
I'll seek
clarity. Right now, if they go to stay in Coast, we would get the full block for that student.
Right. And I was pretty clear in our discussions that that would exactly be the case, that we would get that full block cost. But
I think we
will need to make sure that's put in here clearly.
Thank you.
That was clearly understood in our negotiations that that would be the case, but if we need to make sure that's written in here somewhere, that's very good.
Mr. Robinette, you feel like you have enough to go on?
I have enough to go back and say, let's tweak it a little bit.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Robinette. Do we have any public comment on this issue? Seeing none, we'll move on. We are now at the new and modified courses, middle school mathematics, first reading.
Good evening. You will remember previously I brought to you the math progression document that showed the accelerated courses and the math options considering our new Common Core courses. This addresses the accelerated courses along with the math changes at the middle school. So if you remember, one acceleration option we have within the acceleration document is for students in the middle school to accomplish 7th grade math, 8th grade math, and Algebra 1, 3 years worth of math into 2 years. So we had to change our middle school courses, and we brought this separately since it did was associated with the accelerated math document. So tonight it is the first reading, but I would also ask either for a first reading or for your approval of the middle school math courses.
Mr. Millar.
I'm not following you. Point me in the right direction.
I'm trying.
There is an accelerated course that combines...
You're talking about math support class, Mark?
Yeah.
The last sentence in the math support class.
Yes, thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks. Yeah, so the math support, as you know, our document has addressed the acceleration issue extensively, but we have not addressed the need for support and the need for intervention in the middle school math yet, and that will be, you know, an elaborate process that we'll need to gather a lot of input from math teachers and to do that more extensively. But yes, this math support class would be a parallel class, so that students that need extra support, it would be the beginning of that thought process of this would allow students to have some front-loaded information so that they could then walk into their math class and be successful.
Okay, so this is sort of linking back to our STEAM model and all of the wonderful electives, and what I'm wondering is, in order to get this dual class, are they going to be giving up
It would be in the place of an elective, yes.
It would be in place of an elective. All right. And I don't know if it's possible, but can these students that are going to be being in this dual class situation be identified sooner and so that we let them we can get this resolved earlier? And or can summer school be used to get them prepared so they're not taking the concurrent classes? Or maybe
right.
The summer before they're doing one.
And I think that we do have a lot of supports in place at elementary, and these students are identified and often given those interventions. And yes, summer school could be a way to help support those students as well. Just sometimes students need more. And so there, you know, we use data to try to carefully select who really needs it and what could we do to make sure they're successful in middle school math.
Okay. And I just want to say I'm with Mr. Millar because I think I'd be taking two math classes myself.
Mr. Unger, did you have your question answered? You did. Okay. So I'm going to entertain a motion, Mr. Millar.
I'll move approval, dispensing with the second reading, and move approval of the new modified math courses.
Do we have a second?
I'd be happy to second. So, it's just hard for me to count to two.
It's been moved by Mr. Millar and seconded by Mr. Buckman. I do have one thing to do it, and that is to ask, is there any public comment? And seeing none, I think we can bring it back to the board for a vote. Any further questions? Okay. Seeing none. Okay. All in favor of the new and modified courses for 7th and 8th grade? And aye. Okay. Motion carries 7-0.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Kim. All right. We are now on to completion of the ballot for CSBA delegate. Dr. Prater.
So last December, the board submitted a nomination for Trustee Buckman. His term is expiring on CSBA's delegate for Region 9C. And CSBA has just provided us with the ballot for the next period for their votes, and they're due by March 17th. Since Mr. Buckman has served as Region 9C, he's quite delicate. He's quite familiar with it over the last 6 years. He would like to continue. There's an additional candidate on this ballot. That's Carrie Friend from the Cayucas School District. And the board is invited to discuss this topic and take action to complete the ballot for San Luis Coastal selection.
Mr. Unger?
Well, I'd like to move straight into making a motion to support Mark Buckman as the CSBA delegate for the next 2 years for Region 9C.
And I'll second that.
So we have a motion to approve Mark Buckman as CSBA delegate by Mr. Unger and a second by Mrs. Roger. Mr. Unger, just for clarification, you want that just on Mr. Buckman and then we'll talk about Carrie Friend separately, or... is it just one or is it one or the other choice on this?
Yep.
It is a one or the other choice. I didn't. It says vote for one. Thank you. Right there in front of me. Okay. So there is a motion and a second. All in favor of Mr. Buckman representing us and CSBA, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? So the motion carries 7-0. Oh, we do have one abstention. Mr. Buckman abstains. And therefore the motion carries. Therefore the motion carries 6-0-3, acceptance of donations. Item 9.04, approval of FERS request. 9.05, approval of purchase orders, and 9.06, approval of California High School exit exam CASI waivers for students with disabilities.
I'll move approval of items 9.01 through 9.06.
We have a motion.
I'll second.
Okay, a motion by Mr. Millar and a second by Ellen. I'm sorry. Occasionally I have a senior moment. Sorry. First on my right. Okay. Is there any discussion?
Well, it just occurred to me that I wanted to say something. That we frequently have this item, approval of California High School exit exam waivers for students with disabilities, and we routinely approve it. We never explain it. And I think that, you know, for anyone who may be watching this, I think it's really something that we should be applauding. It's our students with disabilities who are passing the high school exit exam with with minor modifications that that are required under their IEPs, like, for example, a math exam with the use of a calculator, an English language arts exam with the assistance of a visually impaired child, with the assistance of someone reading a question to them. So it's every time we approve these waivers, it means that students have demonstrated real achievement and that we should be each time applauding their efforts and the fact that they have passed these exams. I just wanted to say that.
And I'll just add what's written here is that they have completed sufficient high school level coursework, and they are in progress to completing that, or they've already completed sufficient to have attained skills and knowledge otherwise needed to pass the CASI. And also, to this end, the following students have passed the CASI with a score of 350 or better using modifications as provided or as per their IEP in accordance with the California Department of Education guidelines. So we have a motion and a second. And so let's, on the items on the consent agenda, all in favor, action agenda, I'm sorry, all in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
I did have it right initially. Okay, and any noes and no abstentions. Okay, so the motion carries 7-0. Thank you. We are now on the advanced agenda, item 10.03. Okay. Dr. Eisendrath Rogers, please.
Thank you. That's a mouthful. I've received a number of emails from our ag departments regarding the agriculture, they call it the, I'm just going to read this for a second, the AIG, the Agriculture Education Incentive Grant, and the possible elimination of those monies by the governor. And I would just like to, I think it might be appropriate if we get some more information about that, either in a Friday packet or at our next meeting, about what that will mean to our ag programs and what people in the community can do, perhaps write to Akhmajian, who already has already written a letter to the governor supporting the reinstatement of that grant. But Mr. Monning has not, and so that might be a useful bit of information for us to have.
We can do that.
Thank you.
Anything else for Vance agenda? Okay, so that'll be a Friday item. I saw a nod over there. Okay. So we are now to the item point 11.01, the board reports. Mr. Unger.
Well, I just wanted to give a short report on my trip to Washington, D.C. I went as part of a CSBA delegation to the National School Boards Association Advocacy Institute, where we learned about national issues related to schools and school boards. We supported local control, which I think really in California we've taken some really strong steps toward that, much stronger than most states in the country. We supported additional support for special education, support for additional broadband capabilities for schools to access the internet, and this is a huge issue because there are a lot of, you know, in California we talk about being able to have access for the Smarter Balance assessments. Well, it's a nationwide issue, and it relates to the E-rate as well. We heard from Bob Woodward, very, very interesting. That was pretty fun. And Dr. Bernice King, the daughter of Martin Luther King. I was able to meet with staff members from Barbara Boxer's office. I met with Mrs. Capps, she was gracious enough to spend some time to talk to me, and her staff was as well. We met with White House staff members who are involved in the African American and Hispanic educational initiatives. So we had an opportunity to talk to folks from there, and they really wanted to talk about what we're doing in California to try to narrow the achievement gap. There's some exciting things going on and some expectations from the Obama White House for kids of color, and it was really pretty. Carrie's at Del Mar, and she just retired last week. It was her last week. She's great. She's the person that you walk into the office, and when a kid has a boo-boo, she takes care of it. If kids have other kinds of specialized health care needs, she's the one that's volunteered to take care of this stuff for the kids on the Del Mar campus. And you know what? She is really going to be missed, and those are going to be some big shoes to fill. And so congratulations to Elizabeth, and best of luck on this next part of your life.
Mr. Buckman.
Walter, I have a half hour. Do you want to just leave now? Or? Okay. I just have one thing. I heard wonderful things about Chris's presentation with the PTA, and I guess just bragging, I was lucky enough to be part of that same presentation both up in Paso Robles and in Atascadero. In Paso Robles, interestingly enough, we had 50 people attending, and several of them had some very strong questions about the government taking over public education. So this continues to be an area where we need to do those types of things. I'm glad to hear that we're being asked to do them around our district.
Any other school reports? Okay. Seeing none, we are adjourned until our retreat on the 25th from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. And thank you. Thank you, everyone.